The Fugitives, written by Jamal Mahajoub and read by Ahmed Hamad.
Part 1. Raising the Dead. كثير العيوم قصير العمر. The clouds are many and life is short. الحسين الحسن. Habitat عمري. Chapter 1. Learning to Write. This is a story about a band that lived and flourished and then died its own natural death. At that point, it should have disappeared from the pages of the history books forever, and it would have done so if an extraordinary miracle had not occurred and brought the Kamanga Kings back to life. The only religion I ever had any faith in is music. I was brought up to respect tradition. I learned to say my prayers. In school, we listened to an old teacher muttering on about the life and times of the Prophet. I did my best to picture it, but 7th century Arabia felt as far away as Mars. In my heart, I believed that if there was a heaven, that it would be inhabited by saints who answered to the name of John Coltrane and Charlie Parker, to Monk, Louis Armstrong and Nina Simone. Some of our own would be up there too, seated alongside them. Hassan Atiyah and El Balabil and, of course, our very own Kamanga Kings, the greatest of all. Great music transcends all barriers. My father used to say that. He used to say a lot of things. He saw himself as something of a philosopher when he wasn't being a musician. The way he told it, a nation is like a band waiting for a conductor to show up. Without a leader to guide them, an orchestra is just a flock of lost sheep lacking direction. He was certainly right about the country. Our entire history was a list of men who claimed a divine right to lead us. Those who objected tended to fall by the wayside. By the time I was old enough to start asking questions of my own, he was already gone. And maybe that's just the way of things. He paid the price of living in an age when music was not simply frowned upon, but actively discouraged. Musicians had to flee for their lives. They were imprisoned and tortured, along with poets and writers, academics, journalists, anyone, in fact, who would voice an opinion. Musicians were objectionable because they could stir your soul, and there were a lot of people who were scared of that. At this point, I should probably apologize. The last thing you expected when you picked up this book was a meditation on leadership and national politics. I beg for your patience just a little while longer. I'm new to this writing game. It's not easy. Whenever I get stuck, which is often, I ask myself, what makes this book worth writing? The answer I always find myself coming back to is simple. If I don't do it, nobody else will. Were the kings truly as great as people said? I don't know. I'm not sure how we define greatness. All I know is that when they played, back in their heyday, they did something extraordinary. And that when we reformed the band, there were moments when we played, really played, when we stirred something in the fabric of the universe that could not be described or imitated, could not be repeated. It had to be lived in that moment, because that's all it was. A moment. But that's what we did, and it's what we still do when we go out and play. Together, we become something more than the sum of our parts. I don't know about you, but to me that sounds pretty close to a definition of greatness. Like most little boys, I started out dreaming of becoming a superhero, a man possessed of extraordinary powers who would devote himself to righting the world's wrongs, to saving people, leaping over tall buildings and flying to the rescue of beautiful women who were in distress. And, like most children, I grew up to discover life doesn't exactly work like that. Instead of a superhero, I became a teacher. I taught English and history to a bunch of ungrateful boys. I took my work seriously. I tried to instill in them a sense of appreciation and respect for the wonders of the world and of literature. It was a thankless task. All they saw was a short-sighted man spouting nonsense that they could not put to any useful purpose. It was a good school, or it had been. It had been founded by an Italian priest who had left home 150 years ago and risked his life travelling across the desert on a donkey to bring us news of Jesus. That's all ancient history now. He didn't manage to convert us all, but he did build this school. Nowadays, it caters to the sons of low-ranking military officers and government officials. The high-ranking ones send their children to more fancy places abroad,